Hey, this is a dark tangent. Organizer of DEF CON. You're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 3, held July 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1995. Now, the Tropicana has since been renovated. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, all rights reserved, the Dark Tangent, and DEF CON Communications. Permission is expressly granted, though, for educational, non-profit use. If you have any more questions about DEF CON, or want to send me some email about the copyright status, please email me at dt@defcon.org, or the website is www.defcon.org. Now, kick back, get ready for some good speeches, and thanks for supporting it.
I guess so.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we've got a lot of crap left. I didn't realize how much stuff we've got to give away, so it's going to be one big old feeding frenzy any minute now. I can feel it. TDK is going to start hurling things into the audience. Start with those really groovy radio t-shirts. Somebody dumped off country music shirts, so we're just going to... Aw, yeah! Biatch. Yeah, don't. Okay, after that we're moving on to, I want to actually throw this into the audience because it's fairly light. The PC Slave 286 High Performance Networked AT on a card from like 20 years ago with 1 meg of RAM. No manual. The guy in the brown got it. What is it? Next, we have a device. The Cybonex something. If you can figure it out, it's yours. Okay, next. Okay, nobody go on a feeding frenzy yet, but you're free to rape and pillage all my spare 1200 baud modems in that box on the right. One customer per modem. We have one. I just felt like getting rid of a lot of this stuff, so when I get down to the grand prize of the gig drive, I won't have a big feeding frenzy. No. I'm actually using the old tickets on the big prize. Yep. Oh, that 80 meg MFM full height. No. Here we go. I want to use the ticket on that treat. Okay. 349, 427, 708, 654. Really? There it is. Give the man a hard drive. A big floppy disk.
Okay,
Well, I'm going to start the same way I started at HoHoCon, which is, some of you know me, some of you don't. My name is Death Vegetable, and I'm from the CDC, and the way you, some of you might know me is I was on Dateline NBC last year, and I'll give a little background. Originally, I was on TV as a result of some of the anarchy file things. Did anyone here see me on TV? Yeah, you saw me on TV. It sucked, right? Yeah. Okay, well, and such I bring you to my topic, which apparently is the media sucks. Thank you. Yeah. I'm not doing the Lombada, though. No Lombada for me. I'm sorry. He'll give you a free refund. No, probably not. Let's see. Let me start. Let me give you a little bit of background. Okay. I was one of those 15-year-old Beavis and Butthead loser kids who wrote an anarchy file when I was 15. Which, you know, you've seen them out there, blah, 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 blah. And I wrote one, didn't think anything else of it, went on to bigger and better things, CDC, so to speak. relatively better, bigger and, well, bigger. In August of 1993, September of 93, actually, I found out that a sysop in Connecticut, Michael Lansky, a.k.a. the Ionizer, had been imprisoned by Connecticut for having my files on his board. He was charged with, let's see what he was charged with, I have it written down here. He was charged with inciting injury to persons or property, which is a felony, and risk of injury to a minor, which is a misdemeanor, since he had this file on his board, which there happened to be a 14-year-old on. So that was risk of injury to a minor or something. That happened. I found out about it in September. He was actually imprisoned in, he was put into jail in August. So I decided I wanted to do whatever I could to help him out because, you know, this is obviously a crock of shit. He had this is publicly available information. I got most of the information from books like Chemical Demonstrations, textbooks, or then you have the Anarchist Cookbook, things like that are publicly available. And I think this whole incident pretty much shows the sort of double standard between that the law enforcement and judicial systems community tends to show between electronic and printed information, that there seems to be this lack of understanding that the First Amendment applies just as much to electronic information as it would to printed. You don't see anybody being busted for having a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook on their shelf or a copy of a high school chemistry textbook. But anyway, they put him in jail and they charged him. The other thing that they said that was dangerous about him is that he had threatened that there were threats against law enforcement agents, which would be, well, I mean, everyone here has seen an anarchy file at one time or another, right? Yeah. And you know how most of them pretty much had those disclaimers at the beginning that say, oh, you know, this is for informational purposes only, blah, blah, blah. Well, me being the wise ass I was, decided that was a crock of shit. So I wrote a disclaimer that said, notice to law enforcement agents, this file is intended to create general havoc and anarchy. And since you are going to be the first fuckers up against the wall, there's nothing you can do about it, pigs. They didn't like that. that pissed them off. So they took that as a direct threat against law enforcement agencies, or law enforcement agents, police officers, and decided to nail this guy to the wall. They were to get him. My file just sort of provided a way to get him, to get at him. So he went to jail. His bail was set at $500,000. Now keep in mind that the average bail for an accused murderer in Connecticut is $250,000. So this is completely insane. Now, there are a lot of other weird things about the case in that his lawyer was not present at his arraignment. That he was not allowed to have his lawyer present. Just the entire thing was completely unconstitutional. Now eventually he went through a lot of things. I helped out his lawyer, his on the case. I gave a statement saying, you know, I wrote these files, you know, I didn't intend to cause any harm, blah, blah, blah. But his lawyer was an idiot. I mean, I called him up and I talked to him and to find out, you know, what he was going to do. And he's like, well, you know, I don't really want to deal with the First Amendment issues. I was like, what are you on crack? That's your entire case. But, he didn't. deal with the entire with the First Amendment issues, and instead chose the plea bargain, in which the two charges concerning my files were dropped, and Atlansky pleaded guilty to two unrelated charges of probation violation, and was sentenced to 28 months in federal prison. In state prison, and served 16 months. He's now free. So that happened. And that was all done with, you know, I figured, okay, cool. I'm done with this anarchy file thing. It's out of my life. Until a few days before HoHoCon in 1993, in which I received a call from, actually my parents received a call from a reporter in Montreal, Canada, who had the news that, three young teenagers in Montreal had injured themselves using things that they'd made for my file, pipe bombs, actually, which I'm not really sure how they screwed it up, but they did, and they injured themselves, which, you know, I feel bad about, but that's not my responsibility. They injured themselves, and suddenly, you know, this was big news that, you know, just tied into the whole media. You know, there's bad things on the internet. You know, kids are getting hurt. You know, so suddenly I was getting calls from everybody. I got a call from, you know, CBS and a bunch of different newspapers. You know, I did a couple of interviews. I did one for the Montreal Gazette, which came out something. They put a computer data can be dangerous, which my response is duh. you know, crossing the street can be dangerous too. They interviewed me and all that went through. And it was really kind of an odd situation. I mean, considering that there was, I mean, I didn't have a copy of this file at all after Lindsay. I mean, this file was a piece of shit. I mean, I read it when I was 15. Spelling errors, it was a piece of crap. I deleted it. I actually didn't think there were any copies of it left anywhere. But then after the Lansky case, you know, from maybe, you know, a few copies of it, suddenly there were thousands everywhere because people were like, hey, what's all this news about? I want to get my hands on that. And some Canadian kids, I guess, decided that they wanted to build things from it. But and they fucked it up somehow. I'm not really sure how. So that happened. And then eventually, you know, I started getting calls from Dateline NBC and various news shows. And me being the innocent young lad that I was, decided, yes, I'll do a Dateline NBC ad. You know, they weren't that bad when they did the hacking thing with Blood Axe and everything. No, that wasn't that bad. That's good. So we talked and I said, you know, there's some things that I don't want to talk about that I'm not going to discuss with you. They said, sure, fine. And then, you know, time came. They came over to my house. Everybody was nice. And then as soon as the interview started, they launched into me talking about the things that we agreed we wouldn't talk about. Just the reporter was actually Deborah Roberts or something like that. She was the same one who did the exploding pickup truck story where Dateline NBC blew up the pickup truck. Where, you know, I wish I could have said, you know, well, I guess you know a little bit about bombs, don't you, Deborah? I did that, but I mean, they just kept asking me, don't you feel responsible? Don't you feel bad? This is so horrible. Don't you feel responsible? And although I was stunned, you know, I managed to stick to my, you know, my gun and say, you know, I don't feel responsible. It's not my fault. I mean, yes, I feel bad that these kids were hurt, but I mean, if a kid is going to make a bomb, a kid is going to make a bomb. It's either, if it's from my file or chemistry book or the anarchy cookbook, you know, he's going to make a bomb. And, you know, there wasn't any huge fault in the instructions. I mean, a pipe bomb is pretty simplistic, but that's beside the point. I mean, so that went through, and I was saved. I was saved in the end, but they could have made me work look a lot worse, but than they did because they found a better villain in the guise of the publisher of Loom Panics, who came off as a complete sociopath. they would, you know, she asked him, how do you feel that, you know, these kids, you know, blew off their fingers, and he just was rocking back and forth and saying, I feel nothing. I do not know them. This does not matter to me. And I was watching that. I was like, oh, that's bad. Ooh, that's bad. But that saved me from coming off as really bad. But right then, I decided that I wasn't going to do any more those network sort of tabloid TV shows. Although I would like to be on Geraldo just so I can, I don't know, kick his ass or something. I'm looking for, I just, you know, I want, I mean, he mentioned CDC on Geraldo. He called us a bunch of sickos, which we were very proud of. We're like, yes, Now let's go in and beat him up. But no, I want to do that. I just want to wait for like one person in the audience, one white trash loser to just be, I think what you did was terrible and that you are a horrible person. And I'll just, you know, well, I find you subhuman. And your opinion is utterly meaningless to me. But I don't know. There's that. But then I spent a while before I did any more interviews. And then I was approached by Rodney Palmer, who's with the CBC Radio, and at Hope last year. And I worked with him on a documentary about Hope and about sort of things like that. And that came off really well, I thought. I mean, not everybody agreed. Ludacris didn't like the way it came off, but I was very happy with it. And then he decided that he was hired to do a show for TBS, which some of you might have seen, which was called Cybermania, which I lovingly refer to as Cyberlamia. And we did that. And the show was pathetic, but our segment was actually pretty good. I and a bunch of the Loft Boys, Nemail Goldstein was in it. And that came off pretty well. It was different in that he let us talk about what we wanted to, and it was pretty much freeform. And when it came out, it was one of the first sort of positive, you know, hackers talking about themselves, things that I'd seen at all. It's a pretty interesting bit. And I did that. And that was the last sort of television thing that I was gonna do for a while. I did a magazine thing while I was for Rodney also, when I was at HoCon, and that was published in Shift Magazine, which is a Canadian sort of culture magazine. I was distributing that earlier. They sent down a bunch of copies, which somebody here opened, even though it was addressed to me. But I'll find them and have them killed later. So did that, but then okay, everything's done. I'm fine, cool. You know, everything's done. And around comes the Oklahoma City bombing. And suddenly my phone's ringing. And, you know, most people I politely said no. I mean, a few things I thought about, then I was like, wait a second. This is the A1 worst time in American history to be at all associated with making bombs. So I said, no, I don't think so. Then there was ABC, which called me and called me again and called me again and kept calling me. And eventually when they got the idea that I really meant no, they started to call my parents. And my parents were cool enough to say, get out of here, you know, we're not going to talk to you. But, I actually have I'm quite upset at ABC still, just for that sort of harassment. Which brings me to the what? It's, I don't really have any proof. I mean, they called me, but, I mean, it was more annoying than like really evil. What? I don't know, but that brings me to the topic, the supposed topic, which is the media sucks. Now, let me clarify that. The media, what I mean when I say that is that the media's sort of view of hackers and the way that they represent us to the public sucks. You know, the average public sees us as, you know, either war games, sneakers, you know, anarchist, whatever, that are going to go move satellites and start World War III, or just, you know, computer nerds who are whatever. I mean, it's really kind of pathetic. I mean, and you very, very rarely see a positive or even accurate view of hackers in the media. And that's something that I think that we need to work to change. I mean, a lot of you invariably are going to be approached by the media at some point, either be it your local paper, be it television, be it whatever. And there's a lot of things that I think that each of you need to remember when dealing with the media, which I have learned in the hard way, which is don't let them push you around. They want a story from you. You are in control. Don't let them do what they did to me with Dateline and sort of make you look really bad. Because that's only going to go further the public sort of disinformation campaign. And you know, there are some positive things, like Annalisa Savage's her unauthorized access video, the documentary that she did by herself, which is actually on sale for here. Shameless plug. $25 up the front. Which actually personally I think is the best sort of video that I've seen about hackers, about the culture, the subculture at all. But for the most part, they don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear, you know, what we actually do. They want to hear about, I mean, it's like The Wired. I mean, if, I don't know, we're in an interview at Hope. Did you remember the Wired reporter who was running around and saying, "Where's the crime? Where's the crime?" And as Ludi put it, it was "I'll show you some crime, felony assault." Like, shut the hell up! I don't know. I mean, it's insane. They don't want to know what's going on. They want a ripe little story to sell to the masses, or something that can get them viewers, and it doesn't matter whether it's true. And this is very, very common. I mean, you are going to run into the honest reporter. The best reporter that I've worked with so far, the best journalist, was Rodney Palmer. And you know, I still consult with him every so often. He'll give me a call and say, "What's going on? What do you think about this? What blah blah blah?" And I'll help him out, since he's a nice guy and he's fighting the good fight. Whatever. So there was that, and then that was pretty much my point. I was going to open myself up to questions about either the Ilansky case, the bomb files, freedom of information, First Amendment rights, things like that. Things that I've been sort of thinking about and dealing with through various journalists or on the net or just whatever speaking. Does anyone have any questions? Oh, come on, someone must have a question. What's your question?
Hey, you were saying that don't let them manipulate it so that you look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Can't they just do that in the editing?
They can. I mean, that's partially what they did. But you can do your best. I mean, try, stay cool. And if they start asking you questions like I was asked, don't you feel horrible? Isn't this terrible? Don't you feel responsible? What I should have done was, say, this interview is over. We agreed that we would not talk about it. I'm out of here. But I was too shocked. I was very surprised. Is that, yes. Yeah. I actually don't have a copy of it right now. It's bad. You don't want it. Just don't give it to any Canadians. Anyone else? No, Dateline did not pay me. Dateline. Okay, so I've actually never been paid. I've actually been, I forget who it was. It's like you're a media whore. I'm like, no, I'm not a media whore. I've never been paid. So that makes me a media slut. Any of those, they like to think of themselves as real news. They're not real news shows. They're a step above hard copy, but so what? So they didn't pay me. They even said they were going to buy us pizza, and they didn't buy us pizza. They were afraid of my... Those bastards! No, they were afraid of my house, actually. Like, they came in, they're just like, "No, we don't want any coffee." They're really scared. It was pretty weird. It's hacker coffee. Yes, pretty soon they will be writing... It will make you blow up. I don't know. You never know what hackers have in their coffee. Cream, sugar, ecstasy. I need some of that. Anybody else? Questions about Mr. T? Oh, way in the back. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do because they're not always going to use everything you say. Plus, they don't always know. I mean, in my experience, the amount they devote to what you say primarily depends on the merit of what you say, which is what they don't know that until afterwards. I will talk about what I have to talk about, and then if asked questions, I will elaborate upon those. Or if there are specifics. Mm-hmm. Which fight? That? Mm-hmm. Well. Well, see. Now, that's not absolutely true because of the advent of things like the internet. I mean, you can at least make it clear to some things, but But hang on. What I was going to say was that your point is exactly why I won't deal with things like ABC. I deal with people that I've come to trust, or that, you know, I will talk to someone before I grant an interview. I'm very, very careful about who. I mean, I've done one interview while I was here with a man from the Canadian Discovery show, which I think that was pretty well done. But go on. Did you have something else? Strangely enough, it's actually, I mean, there have been things like HoCon 93, Mitch Cabe, who took my speech. I got up and talked at HoCon 93 about what had happened, and afterwards, you know, he talked to me, and, you know, answered a few questions for him, and then he posted a message to the Usenet, which was completely not based in reality, in which he said something to the effect of that he picked me up by my shirt collar and grabbed me and shook me and said, "How could you say that? I know who's responsible. You're responsible." And I was just like, "Yeah, yeah. Come on. Yeah. I mean, when Dark Tangent was a, you know, and asked me to speak, I was like, you know, is Mitch going to be here? Is Mitch going to be here? Because I really want to hit him. I should want to go, okay, yeah, come here, grab my collar, please. Yeah. Dude, Mr. T would kick Boba Fett's ass. You, dude, no, man. I'll be the fool trying to vaporize me. Dude, just, I will clarify by saying that the three patron saints of the Cult of the Dead Cow are Mr. T, Boba Fett, and Barry White. We haven't really... Mr. T would kick anybody's... The only person who could ever kick Mr. T's ass is Andre the Giant, and he's dead. Because Andre the Giant could kick anyone's ass. That's my theory, anyway. Because he was, like, 80 feet tall or something. I was very pleased that there was a Mr. T question asked in Hacker Jeopardy. That just made my day. What? Dude, it's just Mr. T. You know, he could be bald and naked, and he'd have no arms, and he would still kick whoever's leg. Yeah, you know, he could just be like this disembodied head, and he'd still win. He's Mr. T. I mean, if you have to ask that question, I suggest you go out and rent DC Cab. You need to be watching more A-Team reruns, man. That's all there is to say. Does anybody else have any questions? Sirius or Mr. T? Okay. I mean that's what I do, and that's partially what I'm trying to convey, is that you need to figure out. But you guys just hang on. you need to find out what's going on. I mean, like before I dealt with Rodney Palmer, I found out, you know, that he was going to be interviewing Emmanuel, and he was interviewing Ludi, and he was interviewing Garbage Heap from 40 Hex and things like that. And because when Tweety Fish brought him up to my room. I was like, he's like, oh yeah, this is a guy from the Canadian Broadcasting Company. I'm like, oh God, Canadian. they're gonna love me. you blew up our kids, eh? I don't know. But, yeah. Actually, no, I mean, I was like, oh no, but it was really good. And, one of the things that let me deal with the guy from the Discovery Canada, I have a lot more respect for Canadian journalists than American right now, just because in general, when I've dealt with them, both reporters and television and radio, that they seem to not have that sort of sensationalist attitude that you know the networks have out here, things like that. I mean, I get calls from people. I've gotten calls that are like, you know, well, will you show us how to hack something? Will you hack something on the air? Or will you show us how to make a bomb or whatever? I'm like, go home, leave me alone. You know, go call the MOD. But, I mean, I don't need to deal with this. Okay, now, what was the question? Yeah. What would I do? Oh, that's a tough question, because I can't even imagine being Mr. T. It is like beyond my consciousness. That's like, I don't, there's nothing, there's no, how can you even ask that question? Okay, you were dreaming, Mr. T. What a man.
He's a man.
I think Mr. T should start a hardcore rap career. But he'd have to be Ice Mister, because Ice T's already taken. Yo, 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 and I'm here to say, I pity the fool, make my day. I don't know. Mr. T. Thank you. Oh. Torky, you had a question? Oh, you raised your hand. Ask me a question. I saw you. Well, what was it? Well, not... I want to talk about this.
Oh, okay. Thanks for it.
Okay. Okay. I just want to make one point. I want to make a point about sensationalist media, which for me is just a prime example. What I have here is a copy of Masters of Deception, the gang that ruled cyberspace. Ooh, which was written better than your average Archie comic. I read it in an hour. I actually talked to Josh Quintner, and Josh Quintner is actually, he's a really nice guy, which I actually think is his downfall, is that he believed a lot of what people who really don't deserve, shouldn't be believing, you know, John Lee or the Wing, who just, you know, they're not trustworthy people. And he bought into their story and trusted them and believed them, and that's bad. and that showed through in the book. But it's not just that. I mean, listen to the title, the gang that ruled cyberspace. I mean, what kind of connotations that we had? Like when I talked to him, he refused to admit that the word gang has negative connotations in our society. And he was like, no, it doesn't. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then to sum it all up, you know, he had seen me on TV and recognized me from there, and he signed it, you know, to the death vegetable of the CDC. I hope you don't become the sequel. To which my response was, I'm not going to become the sequel, because you'll get as far as death vegetable CDC, and the C will be like, you will be unable to type the C because the keys will be coming out your teeth. I will have shoved the typewriter so far up your ass. I want no part of that. Dark Tangent actually had something he wanted to add about me or John.
Oh yeah, you guys were devolving into the whole media thing, and I understand her points, but it's baby T.
Where?
I pity the fool. I pity the cuckoo.
Anyway, and I've gotten approached by the media several times, and I got my one burn. And
what was your one burn?
Well, it was kind of painless because it was really small media, mm-hmm. but I mean, it highlighted it for me. And after that, it was like I was really cautious, and I don't do video any. I try to avoid it unless I start spouting off on a specific topic and I stick with that topic, so they just can't soundbite me into little pieces.
Yeah.
The first thing I ask is, I say, well, what is your slant? Is this the good hacker piece? Is this the bad hacker piece? Is this the crazed hackers in Vegas piece? Is this the interesting people? And you can see the wheels clicking in their head like, oh, what was the slant of my piece? Oh, well, this will be sort of a fear and loathing in Las Vegas piece, or this will be sort of the interesting hackers piece. Or, is this a technical audience, or is this like a social piece? Oh, well, and then immediately you know what you're dealing with. You know what they're going to structure it as, because you know when you read the newspaper what kind of a piece it is. Is it the human interest piece, or is it the interesting? Yeah, or the big old hunk of crap. And I just have to be really careful about it. And the media doesn't really help me. I mean, I don't think it's worth it for me to go out of the way when Channel 8 comes booting in the door and wants to get in for free and free this and free that. And I say, no, that didn't hurt me. I mean, it's not like, oh, no, I'm doomed now. I'm not getting a job or anything. And so a lot of times it's not even necessary to go to the media. Or even if they come to you, you don't get anything out of it unless, I mean, there's no, oh, you're exposing yourself to, like, massive public ridicule, and you're not increasing your stature really at all. So, I mean, I'd think it through.
I mean, there's always going to be that, there's always the aspect of, you know, whatever, you know, the wanting to hype your name or whatever. But, you know, I mean, especially since, you know, we in CDC tend to believe that, you know, there's no such thing as bad press, but it's not true. I mean, I found that out when ABC started calling me about all that stuff. You know, I mean, people like to ask, you know, say, CDC, you guys have sold out. I'm like, no, we haven't sold out. You know, we'd like to, but nobody's offered. Go, offer us something. We'll sell out. No problem. But, yeah, does anybody else have any questions about, yeah, okay.
The big question is, do you love?
Very much. Next. Anyone. Okay, then I will give away this. This here is a hard drive. I'm not actually sure, like, what the size is, but it was I don't know, this big. How much is it? You know? But it was trashed from behind the Motorola building in a Cambridge, Mass. So who knows what's on there? Maybe it's wares. Maybe it's cell stuff. Maybe it's stuff from Area 51. We don't know. What? Maybe the hard disk does. Yeah, the hard disk does not exist. Oh. Okay. What we have here is free accounts on CompuServe. Take it. It's a blank disk waiting to happen, guys. They sent you good quality disks. Heads up, I don't want to, like, take out an eye. It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Then it's just fun.
I know, then it's just fun because you have an eye to play with. What we have, I don't even know what this is. Reno Air, America Online. Oh, this is a nice big one. Oh, it's a CD. It's a CD, which isn't a blank disk waiting to happen. I don't know what it's. Oh, it's America Online. Actually, what we use these for are pretty decoration.
They make great
coasters. Well, they're metal, though.
No.
Oh, it is a disk. Never mind. I lied. Whoa! I don't want to nail you with a big, heavy thing. Stay away. Oh, more CompuServe stuff. Okay, let's see. I got the arm, biatch! Oh, yeah. I wanted to, like, give this out just so people could check it out. I wanted to give out the CDC homepage, because the URL of the current CDC homepage, which is ever growing and is expanding, is http :// www.loc, that's L0PHT.com, /cdc.html. It's fun. It's better than a lot of things, but worse than sex. But it's pretty cool. I think, of course, I wrote it, so. Yeah. Okay, http, :// www.loft, which is L0PHT.com, /cdc.html. And just, is there anyone here who doesn't know what CDC is? No, it's not the Center for Disease Control. There's a fake CDC, man, and the CDC Ninja Strike Force is gonna take their asses down. We're not a band. We are the future of rock and roll. CDC is a neo-Marxist, anarcho-socialist terrorist organization formed for the sole purpose of getting on TV.
Where's the thingy?
Where's the thingy? It's a neo-Marxist, anarcho-socialist terrorist organization formed for the sole purpose of getting on TV. That didn't work very well. Where's the tickets?
Oh,
I'm not gonna throw
right
that.
Here, right
oh, that's
here.
It.
Yeah, pick the. I need these orange things.
Oh. Dude, I think I've been, like, tearing these apart by accident.
Wait, here's one. Give this away instead.
I want to give that one away, man.
Look at the name of this one.
How to Make a Fortune. I'm giving that away, too, though.
Okay.
How to Make a Fortune. Can I have that? Bundle them. No, I'm not good, because this is good enough to be its own. How to Make a Fortune on the Information Superhighway. Yes. No, burn it. That's not going to make you a fortune. I think the way to make yourself a fortune is to write this book. I don't know. That's pretty ridiculous. Okay, the winner of How to Make a Fortune is 928-0693.
Oh, it's just the last four? The last
three. 693. No one wants to claim it. I'm so surprised. 665?
Now you know why I throw it.
Well, yeah, but this is a book. I'll nail somebody. Dude, I don't want to take someone out.
You can bounce it off a wall. Bounce it off a wall.
666. Satan wins. Look, if you really want it.
That guy actually wants it.
Who, do you? You actually want it? I gave you something. If anybody gets nailed in the head, I am not being sued. Okay. Huh? Okay, the hard disk. Area 51. Then it won't be very good, will it? 715. Project Green Cheese. 715. Oh, you got it? Cool. Jump up and down. Can you juggle? You don't get it for free, man. We want a show. What? No. You get a hard drive from Area 51. Oh, man.
Death on stage. You get to do the Lombada.
No.
Do I get to give you any more stuff?
No.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
Wait. We don't know what it is. The winner of Dark Tangent is 391. Throw him. Cool. Okay. Whoa, more stuff.